Welcome to the History of California podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. I'm taking a long break from doing narrative episodes. I'm currently working on a book about the history of the city that I live in, which is Fresno. And I've been working on a number of other projects, including the Steinbeck series, which the next episode will cover. So I haven't had time for the narrative episodes, but I'm bringing it back and returning to where we left off with Chinese history in California. And I'm excited to continue the series and pick it back up again because I do find it incredibly valuable to give listeners an overview of major themes, topics, people groups in California history to give perspective and context when things arrive. And so I'm excited to share this episode. We're going to be continuing by talking about Chinese immigrants' role in California's economy. Let's get started. Chinese immigrants were critical to California's economy. In terms of manufacturing, Chinese immigrants were employed in a number of industries, both because of their work ethic and the fact that employers could pay less for their wages. These same Chinese immigrants were instrumental in the woolen mills and shoe factories. Employers found that Chinese immigrants had a high degree of dexterity and manual skill. Chinese immigrants also found themselves employed in most clothing manufacturing that was taking place in California. They manufactured things like soap, candles, watches, brushes, brooms, glues, spricks, powders, whips, paper bags, amongst many other products. The domination of Chinese labor in manufacturing ultimately led, though, to a backlash from organized labor, blaming them for both depressed wages and an economic downturn, which we'll come back to later. Chinese immigrants had a short stint in the lumber industry in Northern California. Some industries were easier for them to integrate into. Lumber was not among those. Chinese immigrants were accepted in support roles as cooks and laborers rather than the central roles in lumber industry of actually felling the trees, which were perceived by people living in California to be jobs for exclusively white Americans. Most famously, though, Chinese immigrants were central in the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad. In the first 2 years of construction, Chinese immigrants were rarely hired to work with management. Because management feared backlash from white workers. However, as the rail line approached the precipice of the Sierra Nevadas, the scale of the task made it clear to management that they needed to use Chinese labor. Chinese laborers took on the biggest challenge of building the Transcontinental Railroad, which was surmounting these mountains. The Sierra Nevadas boast sudden slopes, granite slabs, and every other engineering challenge that you can imagine. Some of this narrative we've covered in our episodes on the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad series. But there were also many challenges that Chinese laborers needed to face individually. First was the climate. If you remember, many Chinese immigrants had come from the subtropical zone of mainland China, which means they likely had little exposure to extreme cold temperatures. For instance, in Guangdong Province, winters are short, mild, and lacking in precipitation, while the summers are long, hot, humid, and wet. Many Chinese laborers worked on the railroad during winter to try and meet the expectations of management, who wanted around-the-clock work on the railroad in order to meet the timeline of the completion of the project. During the winter in the Sierra Nevadas, there are massive snowdrifts, blinding blizzards, and extreme temperatures, which make work treacherous, deadly, and nearly impossible. In fact, Chinese laborers working on the Transcontinental Railroad would experience two of the harshest winters on record during construction. Snowfall at the summit of some of these peaks averaged around 18 feet and sometimes reached almost to 40 feet. To escape the extremes, many workers built snow habitations, digging down beneath the snowdrifts and also creating air valves and chimneys. They built massive labyrinths of passageways throughout the snow, some wide enough to allow for horse-drawn carriages to pass through. There was substantial danger, though, living underneath precarious snowbanks: avalanches. Many crews were carried in torrents of ice down the side of these precipices to their death. In one instance, 20 workers lost their lives in a single avalanche on a single day. Some of them still had their tools in their hands when they were excavated. One common accusation against the railroad companies was that they treated Chinese laborers as indentured servants at best and slaves at worst. Given all that occurred during the harsh winters and the ways that the overseers and managers treated them, Chinese laborers felt that they deserved a change in their poor labor arrangements. Momentum built towards a strike. Momentum built towards a strike, which threatened the Big Four's need for a continuous supply of government subsidies, which was contingent on the fact that the track be laid every single day. In that way, the Chinese laborers knew that they had a substantial amount of leverage, which they did, and the leadership of the Central Pacific knew that they knew as well. At the beginning of the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad, Chinese laborers were paid $26 a month for 6 days a week, with $1 premium added to their wages if they worked in the tunnels, which tended to be a bit more dangerous. 2 years later, Chinese on the whole received a $5 to $10 raise, still not at parity with their European counterparts, who made an additional $15 on top of the standard salary for Chinese laborers. Given that disparities in pay, combined with poor working conditions, were making the job tenuous, harsh, and deadly, it was natural things would eventually boil over. In June of 1867, several thousand workers on the Eastern Sierras refused to work. By sheer numbers, this labor action was the largest of its kind in American history. Management did not respond with grace and understanding, to say the least. Crocker, one of the four, his approach was to smoke them out. They cut off food and provisions and then used hired muscle to make sure that the scabs could return to work. Given the circumstances and how harsh the conditions were, the strike did not last long, concluding after just 8 days. Unfortunately, none of the demands for pay or improved conditions were met. Some might call the strike a failure, therefore, but there can also be ancillary benefits from a strike like this. A few years ago, California Republicans organized a recall vote for Gavin Newsom. The polling data clearly demonstrated that there was no pathway to success in a deeply blue state. Nonetheless, they spent nearly $300 million to organize and accomplish this campaign for his recall. Predictably, the recall failed at the ballot box, but the campaign did successfully bring attention to Newsom, his policies, and the spunky intransigence of the California Republican Party. In the same way, while the express motive of the Chinese strike in the Sierra Nevadas failed, the event did transform perceptions of Chinese-American immigrants. Before this, there were many racial stereotypes of Chinese people. They're passive, obedient, just really automatons. In other words, their work and diligence dehumanized them in the eyes of the white people. But worker bees don't strike, and these Chinese workers did. Not only did the perception of Chinese immigrants change, but their self-image changed as well. In addition to working on railroad, Chinese immigrants were also deeply involved in the mining industry. Now, Chinese were excluded from some mining, but not all mining. We've extensively discussed the legal and extra-legal tools that white miners used to exclude them from the gold mines during the gold rush. Those techniques broadly were successful. Chinese were forced en masse out of the gold mines. But there were other mines that were available to Chinese immigrants to gain employment, and the reason they were available is that many white workers did not want to have any part of these dirtier mines. For example, borax was discovered in Northern California in 1856. Borax has many industrial uses, including household cleaning products, pesticides, and laundry use. Additionally, it was used in industrial manufacturing for things like glass, ceramics, smelting, scientific uses, medicine, and much more. However, mining borax was no cakewalk. The extraction process resulted in a terrible stench that would lead to nose blindness eventually. While beginning in Northern California, the whole process would eventually migrate to Death Valley in the 1860s due to a large load and easier access. The Death Valley operation, though, introduced a new element to the mining of borax: extreme heat. Death Valley is one of the hottest places on the planet, and Chinese miners worked nearly year-round, even in the extreme heat of the summertime. Beyond just mining, though, they were also tasked with creating the infrastructure that would enable the mining companies to move the raw materials out of the desert into industrial centers, building things like roads and other infrastructure elements. Additionally, beyond borax, Chinese immigrants were also employed in mercury mines, often referred to back in those days as quicksilver. Mercury was used extensively in gold mining towns. Here's an explanation of the utility of mercury in mining operations in California. Miners used mercury or quicksilver to recover gold throughout the western United States. Gold deposits were either hard rock or placer. Underground methods were used to mine hard rock gold deposits. Hydraulic drift or dredging methods were used to mine the placer gold drifts. Mercury was used to enhance gold recovery in all various types of mining operations. Historical records indicate that more mercury was used and lost in hydraulic mines than any other type of mines. End quote. The fumes from mercury were deeply dangerous and toxic for human health, which Chinese immigrants were experiencing on a daily basis. Nowadays, we understand much more about these deleterious effects, but back then, much, much less was known. Chinese workers were sacrificed long before the world of OSHA and inspectors. All this being considered, one could argue that Chinese workers were instrumental in pushing the California economy forward. However, just as they propelled California forward, they were blamed when there were economic downturns. When the railroad was finished, the United States became one giant market, where East Coast businesses and manufacturing were now competing with inferior but emerging manufacturing marketplaces in California. The flood of cheap goods from the East Coast created a situation where West Coast industry could not compete. In addition to a flood of cheap goods, this was also a time where there was massive European immigration. The Civil War was the nadir of this period of immigration, and as the war subsided, immigration picked back up to a high clip. While Northwestern Europe still represented the most dominant source of immigrants, we are beginning to see the emergence of some immigration from Central and Southern Europe. With the Transcontinental Railroad complete, combined with the passing of the Homestead Act in 1862, all the incentives were pointing west. There was now more competition for the limited jobs in a flailing economy in California. The situation was set up perfectly. A scapegoat was needed. In times of crisis, people always look for someone to blame, and given the latent racism, And given the presence of latent racism towards Chinese, they were the perfect target. This would eventually result in legislation targeting them in particular with the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. Given the onslaught of prejudice, blame, and hatred lobbed at Chinese immigrants in California, many of them would migrate out of the state, following new opportunities for employment and withdrawing into ethnic enclaves like San Francisco's Chinatown. The true irony of all this is that Chinese immigrants were instrumental in propelling the economy forward. I won't introduce any of the somewhat fraught estimates of Chinese immigrants' impact, but we can say a lot about how the Transcontinental Railroad, which could not have been completed without Chinese workers, impacted the American economy. It enabled national markets for grain, livestock, and coal, and manufactured goods. Prices for goods like wheat and lumber began to converge regionally, signaling tighter market integration. Railroads allowed for labor mobility. Workers could move westward cheaply and reliably. It created new agricultural zones throughout the U.S., given the new logistics operations. In the long run, many economic historians would argue that the Transcontinental Railroad was instrumental in creating the American in creating America as an... In the long run, many economic historians would argue that the Transcontinental Railroad was instrumental in creating America as an international industrial powerhouse in the 20th century. In this way, Chinese immigrants are some of the most important actors in the history of California and the United States more broadly. Next time, we're going to be getting into phases of discrimination, starting with a famous riot that took place in Los Angeles in 1871. We'll see you then.